Hello again, everybody. This is James Bartley, and you're watching and listening to the Cosmic Switchboard Show. Today, my guest is Erickson from Surface Planet Radio. Erickson is an old friend. I've been on the show a number of occasions. Let me read you a bit of about his bio. Erickson, host of Surface Planet Radio FM since the fall of 2013, is a truth puzzle assembler. Erickson is a soul incarnate from the galactic city center of the universe, here to collect receipts and blow the whistle on the activities of the domains Ebens, I like that, and their minion subjugates on planet Earth. Erickson has interviewed me, James Bartley, three times, starting in 2015, as well as Evie Lorgan three times on the Alien Love Bite and many other whistleblowers and experiencers in all areas of space mobster shenanigans and the intergalactic adrenal highway drug trade. An experiencer himself, Erickson spent 5 years in a new age UFO-based meditation cult as a child in 1974 through 1979 and was surrounded by elites growing up in Santa Barbara, California until 1993, at which point a dramatic turn in life took place. Erickson is considered a no-touch, dangerous person of interest with extensive experience in black budget monitoring, AI, weather manipulation, love bites, spiritual archontic entity warfare, life path manipulation, and reptilian spiritual group interference. He is a father, chef, extreme sports enthusiast, hiker, Sunday driver, and collector of nonfiction books, and aspiring comedian. And you can find his past interviews on SoundCloud.com, and we'll have all of his links up on our website. I'm really looking forward to this. Had a chance to have some good hang time with Erickson. It's coming on to a year. Since we hung around rather at the Full Disclosure Now conference in St. Petersburg last year, that was a blast and hanging out with you and then sharing stories or whatever. And one quick point before I bring Erickson in is he's one of those, talk softly, carry a big stick kind of guy. There's a lot of depth to the man. He knows a lot. I mean, he should be the one that's always being interviewed instead of him interviewing a lot of people. So, without any further ado, Erickson, welcome to the Cosmic Switchboard Show.
Thanks, James. It's great to see you again. I
Likewise.
was on
Uh,
your, yeah.
what,
We had
what,
a good time down in Florida.
oh, geez, too good of a time, actually. I was a little bit under the weather when I gave my speech, but I
Know.
hung on. You were out in the audience cheering me on, and honestly, I
Yeah.
was a bit nauseous, throughout that
Oh.
whole next day, and then just praying and okay, just get me through this and everything. And but when I went on stage and started talking, everything clicked into place. But prior to that, I wasn't doing too well, so.
Yeah, I think I'm just starting to blush. It's a bad influence on you a little
Oh,
bit.
no. I'm a bad influence on myself sometimes, but basically we partied down, okay? And I'm not ashamed to say that. I mean, we're in St. Pete, the humidity was such, I'd step out, and I don't know if you went through the same thing, but the moment I stepped out of the air-conditioned hotel room, my glasses would steam up, and so I'd have to make my way to the elevators and everything with fogged up glasses. It was crazy. Well, tell us, Eric, about your life story, your formative experiences in your childhood and what have you. Because I know you yourself have had a lot of experiences and have interacted with a lot of people. And as written up in your bio, you were around a lot of these elites in Santa Barbara. So tell us about that.
Yeah, I lived right next to Montecito, in Santa Barbara. So all the it's they call it Hollywood's backyard. And so that I got to Santa Barbara in about 1980, and my mother, we just got out of the commune. The leader of the commune decided he was Jesus Christ. There was like 200 members in this commune. So the guy, Norm Paulson, a very good friend of George Van Tassel, was started this commune that I was in as a kid. But we moved to, after the commune broke up, we moved to Santa Barbara up in the foothills, just under Gibraltar Road. And like Oprah Winfrey like lived like, 10 minutes away from my house and all that kind of stuff. So I've had some experiences, and I went to like Santa Barbara High School and had some experiences there with like some Satanism stuff actually, that I was thinking about. And I do have kind of a bad voice tonight, just so you know. So I might have to clear my throat. But so I was born in Vermont, and I in so my mother was abducted when she was pregnant with me. I think about 6 months years old. She six months old. And so she says she was taken up into this craft, and she was like telling these, I think they were gray aliens that abducted her, because that seems to be like the general thing, is usually it's grays that do the tagging and monitoring type of thing. And so so a long story, but I was interviewing Lauren Pritchard, and she was talking to James Casbolt after he got out of jail, and James Casbolt thought I was like a second generational hybrid. It's like Nate Gray, he said. So I found that interesting. So I have theories. I don't have any evidence about anything, but I have a lot of circumstantial evidence, like paranormal stuff that's happened.
Well,
So
I like to hear that because it echoes, reminiscent in a way of Dan Sherman's story. If you remember his story, he was the intuitive communicator for the Air Force Security Service, and when he was in the womb, his mother was abducted, and his genetics were being like augmented and enhanced while he was in the womb in order to make him, because they were grooming him even before birth to be this intuitive communicator to receive telepathic messages from the grays. So, yeah, if you were in the womb when your mom was taken, right?
Yeah, it's not too far from where my house is now. It's only like, 15 minutes away from my house. And there's supposed to be a UFO hot spot like over the mountains. There's a lot of mountains here in Vermont, and there's like valleys, and so there's also like supposed to be a base in Alexandria, New York, or something like that. I was doing some research, and that's not too far away across Lake Champlain, just south of the Adirondacks. There's like two routes that go together. It's like Route 6 and Route 6, so it like comes to like a 66, and then like in Alexandria, New York, there's supposed to be a base. Someone did some research on it, so I was thinking of going over there and just checking out the residents in town, and seeing if they act like a bunch of gray hybrids or like
Yeah.
robotics.
Well, my friend Helga Morrow, she went to, well, she's since passed, bless her soul, but she'd gone to Montauk with some of the players that were involved, Al Bielek, and who was that guy that sat in the Montauk chair? His name escapes me at the moment. Cameron, I think his name was.
Duncan Cameron,
Duncan
or
Cameron, yeah. I think that
yeah.
was his name. But anyway, they had gained access into the facility, and then Duncan started getting all these memories, started breaking down crying. But she said that before they went into the facility and afterwards in Montauk, she couldn't help but notice that so many of the males in the population were like teenage boys with blonde hair. It's like everywhere she looked, there was like a Montauk boy. That was the
Yeah.
waiter, a Montauk boy working behind the bar, Montauk boy working the cash register at a store. They all looked alike. It was creeping her out. You know, so when you say something like that, I mean that's not really meant to be frivolous, because there are places where you go and just the hybridization is such that you have all these Montauk people all around in given places, you know.
Yeah, it's actually Elizabethtown, New York, is where south of the Adirondacks is where this base is supposed to be. So for a UFO, it's not too far
Yeah,
from where my mother was.
as the crow flies.
And
Yeah, tell us about some of these theories and speculations you have, which may lend credence to the notion that you're in this hybrid kind of program with Grays.
My theory is that I was incarnated. The astrological, like Vedic astrology, lines up with the galactic center of the Milky Way, I suppose. I think I came from like, I guess you could call it like galactic downtown or something like that. and I might have. I could have been a plasma being in a past life. I really don't know. But I've had like these charts done. And like my and this stuff is it's okay. Erica Amarina did a chart on me. And it's called she uses this website and I could
She's
hardly see it. It's
I
called
think she's a Facebook friend of mine. I'll just check to make
yeah.
sure.
It's called the galacticastrochart.com, which is pretty interesting because it gives you like all like your theoretically your soul's place of origin based on like astrology. Like theoretically your soul would come from like an astrological lineup in the galaxy, and at certain dates and times, certain souls like have a easier access to incarnating here, which is probably a mistake with all the talk about soul traps and stuff like that. So,
Well, I
but
guess
here I am.
we're gluttons for punishment. It's once more unto the breach, and here we are. Interesting, because I've had similar types of astrological charts done on me, and a lot of them are indicative of connections to the jaguars, the felines, the big cats, and it kind of jives with some of my experiences with the latter, you know. So I think there's something to these astrological charts. Excuse me.
I got this one. Sorry for interrupting. It says, galactic trine, shapely attractor square super galactic center. So theoretically, according to that, this chart, I'm from the super galactic center. And then like Lalita Karoly, who's an astrologer, said I came from like the galactic center also based on my astrology chart. So it's pretty interesting.
Well, yeah,
But
it
I'm not,
would
yeah.
explain a lot.
So it's like I felt like throughout life I've had a lot of like manipulation through like relationships and outside like influences, like people that get like hosted and like Anna Page was talking about, and love bite type of situations. Lots of turmoils and learning experiences, and it's been like one big lesson after another in life. So
Well,
it's a
that's what
miracle
happens.
I made it through.
Well, that's what happens sometimes with these really evolved souls. They come here, and I guess they're deemed as some kind of present, clear and present danger or a threat to the controllers in this world or this part of the galaxy. And then they do all this crap to people like you, all kinds of love bite
Yeah.
setups, all kinds of near misses, accidents, what have you.
It's like a tagging and monitoring program, I think. And they just want to make sure that you are kept down and keep quiet and have a lot of stuff going on. And but at this point, I'm in the last third of my life, so I've basically figured out to how to keep my emotions at a minimum and stay out of situations that cause emotional upheaval in life, and also how to like deal with gang stalking and energy manipulation and voice to skull and stuff like that. And so I've become pretty good at it at this point, I could say.
What were the messages coming through in the voice of the skull?
I had one like serious voice to skull when I was 19 or 20 years old. I was sleeping in a park, and that this voice came into my head, and it said, "Don't fear me." So I thought it was like God talking to me directly or something. It was like sounded kind of biblical, and that was like the real that was like a real like, and that was quite a while ago in 1990, 92 or 93. So it was some technology they were working on back then, but at the time I was also being chased around by these military guys with invisibility suits on, which happened twice in the park that I lived in. There was like a squad of military guys and girls, all with invisibility cloaks on, but I could hear what they were saying, because I was like a person of interest at the time, because I completely had like a Christ consciousness scenario happen to me around 1992. And so like I went off and I could see like everything for what it was, and like there was like the Satanists in Santa Barbara like discovered them, and they discovered me. And it was like a it was quite a story, which I was gonna save for like after the initial story of like early childhood, and then get into
Yeah, well,
that story.
you can, yeah. Sorry, I took you out of the chronological order. I just wanted to get an idea of, the thoughts, because sometimes they, depending on the circumstances and the individual they're messing with, they, plant all these despairing thoughts of suicide and hopelessness and what have you. Just because they regard them as a problem, they want to get rid of them. But yeah, go back to your childhood. When was, because now you're one of the top interviewers in our field. Explain that process of, was that something that you wanted to do over time, or just something that you fell into?
It was all out of revenge, James, because I was put into the psych ward and they were telling me I was crazy, but I saw that I what in that I wasn't crazy. And like there was like a German doctor in the psych ward named Dr. Bager, and they were strapping me down to tables and messing with me, and there was like all sh sorts of stuff going on in the psych ward. I'll just get into the story. So like out like when I was when I got out of high school, I took this like I took this LSD called Purple Jesus, right? And it was supposed to trigger you. And like a lot of people that took it like had thought they were Jesus, right? So it was like a CIA LSD type of laced, where it like triggers something in the brain. I guess they had the whatever the thing figured out, the recipe. So I take this stuff and I have a full on like Jesus, and I what I call it now is Project MK Messiah. And it took me a long time to figure it out. And it's kind of rampant these days also, like the MK Messiah thing, where everybody thinks they're a messiah or, you know. And what I feel about it is that, like, we're all, like, you know, special in our own ways. And a lot of times we can, like, read like old texts and feel like that I was one of those beings in the text, and that will give you the MK Messiah complex. But in actuality, they're your innate abilities, you know, spiritual abilities. But you're putting a label on it and saying, well, I was Archangel Mike or Archangel Michael or something like that in a past life, right? So now you're going around telling every and thinking that you're Archangel Michael, right? But it's like these could just be like gray hybrid advances that are just put into you or something like that, for instance. So it's like you have the abilities, but you're putting a label onto it and then telling people that, you know, you go to Thanksgiving and tell everybody that you're Archangel Michael, and they're gonna be like, or think, you know, that's great, you know, but please don't talk about it at the you know, Christmas or Thanksgiving or something like that. So it's disempowering.
So whatever this thing is, up by the CIA Technical Services Division or whatever, right? The pharmaceutical branch, it plugs into or activates that Jesus Messiah complex. Now, is this accompanied by like mystical experiences and visions and that kind of thing as well?
Yeah, it unlocked a lot of stuff in my mind, and it turned into a mystical experiences mystical experience where it was like you actually feel high because you feel like your aura gets all huge and everything feels like a part of you. And I was like walking on the beach at night and like seeing faces in the rocks, and like it felt like ancient, and it felt like I was in a different reality, maybe the fifth dimension. All sorts of stuff happened, a lot of coincidences, and I was seeing like symbology everywhere, and numerology and all kinds of interactions. Like also I was like an empath, and I could see people for who they are and stuff like that. And it was quite intense, and it was enjoyable, honestly, to go to like switch into that kind of reality. But it doesn't go very well in the long term type of deal, you know.
Because you still got to fit into society, you still got to interact with people, hold down jobs, etc. And like a normal acid trip only lasts for so long. Some of it, like in the 60s, of course, Jim Morrison and people like that. I mean, they would take mega micrograms of this stuff and be on, like this Peter Green type high for like days and weeks or months. How long were you kind of in this state for?
I was in it for a good, well, it was the summer, basically, for 2 months, 3 months. And it all culminated in me just getting kicked out of the state, basically for my own safety. And
The state of California?
my lawyer was like, you should probably get out of the state because you keep getting in trouble, which I did. I kept just getting in trouble and, you know, getting sent to the psych ward. But there was like, I stole my mom's minivan, and I was like in this state of hyper consciousness, and I drove it down through the center of LA, and I ended up on a military base, And I was it was a Navy base, and I like went on to the there was two boats in the yard, and I went on one boat, and it was like a fishing vessel with like a flooded hull with water in it. And I was like, that's weird. And then I went into another one that was it was like a fishing boat disguised. It was a but it was a surveillance boat, but it was disguised as a fishing boat. And I go in there, and there's like a big screen TV, and I sit down, and I'm like, well, this is odd. And this guy comes in, and I was like, uh-oh, I thought it was vacant. So I got off the boat, and then the Navy military police showed up, and they put me in this car, and they were like they seemed like secret space program guys, right? And so they put me in this car, and like at that point I like blacked out, and then I came to, and it was I felt like they might have taken me up to Mars, because it was like a red deserty landscape, and there was like this big like stainless steel metallic building that was like a big kind of a skyscraper, if you will, like out in the middle of this area. And I was like, oh man, I think I'm on Mars, you know. So then I black out again, and I wake up in the psych unit in LA at some psych place, you know. And so I might have had missing time there, and I might have been taken to Mars, and I don't have any proof of it, but it's like I had the memory. And then a military nurse takes me into this room, and gives me a he's about to give me a shot of Thorazine, right? And he goes, you don't know how lucky you are. And he like shoots me up, and I black out, and then the next thing I know, I'm on this van going back to Santa Barbara to the they called it the Puff at the psychiatric unit, and back in Santa Barbara. Santa Barbara County Psychiatric Unit. So I'm not, so my working theory at the moment is that they either took me into the programs, or it's like I had some kind of like universal contract to not be taken in the programs, and I like got out of the programs, but somehow I put myself in the situation to like experience something that was happening, you know, with the secret space program, all by like coincidence.
What were the circumstances that led up to you taking that Jesus acid, for lack of a better term?
It was like that time in life where it's like you're young and wanting to get high. And I got out of high school, and I was have kind of feeling I was kind of like rudderless and not knowing what I was gonna do with myself. And so I took it, and then someone put like a suggestion into my mind, like, hey, people that take this LSD think that they're Jesus, and that like I guess it was a trigger or something, or like what's that when they tell you something before, and then it's
Yeah,
like,
narco-hypnosis.
narco-hypnosis. So I took it, and then that happened. So it actually happened, and all kinds of strange stuff happened. There was like a satanic parade, and you know, military people with invisibility cloaks, like that was real. And like I was walking around barefoot, and there was like somehow the Satanists in Santa Barbara like were took an interest to my in my behavior. And there was like an old a bum that called himself Howleo, and he said he was like he was the devil, and he was in charge of the second Planet Earth, Hao Leo's world, which is a common theme these days with the breaking off of civilizations, like the positive timeline and the negative timeline. And that was back in 92. And this guy was like preaching that gospel at the time. So somehow, I guess he was connected to the Satanists in Santa Barbara, but they just took an interest in me, and they ended up having this huge like caravan of all these satanic cars, which are designed to like look unrecognizable and kind of junky and stuff. But they all like drove by me on this road this one day, and then it was quite a scene. And so it's like I had a lot of like confirmations, but I was making a ruckus, and I wasn't being quiet, and also I had expanded consciousness, and there was all kinds of stuff going on. So yeah,
Wonder
it was.
because we can see historical parallels. At one point, the OSS wanted to buy the entire LSD supply from Sandoz Corporation in Switzerland. And then you look over to the acid test in the San Francisco Bay Area, where the CIA asset Owsley, this legendary acid figure, acid manufacturer, used to make like huge batches of LSD. And then, if you remember the acid parties, Ken Kesey, Timothy Leary, the Grateful Dead, all these people would get all dosed. Turned out later that Timothy Leary was a CIA asset, and Ken Kesey may have been as well. So I'm thinking, what if? And I'm sure this thought may have occurred to you at some point, but I'm just thinking out loud. What if that was another aspect of that program where they have a specific type of LSD that activates that particular part of your brain, I guess, to induce these mystical visions. And then, well, maybe they psych profile and genetically profile likely subjects, right? Like you, for
Yeah.
example. And then, some way, somehow, you're inducted into that program, made to take the LSD, and then, all that other stuff ensued, Mars and everything else.
Yeah, it's very it seems like it's likely. That's kind of the conclusion. I don't know who was. I thought it was just a kid giving it to me or selling it to me, like $5 for, the thing, but
For a hit. And it
yeah.
just looked like any other kid that would sell the stuff, right?
Yeah. So yeah, and it was kind of like a culmination of like my earlier childhood and like growing up on this commune, which I have a this is the commune that I was in. I don't know if we can.
Yeah, sunburst.
The Sunburst Commune, and there was like 200 members, and we had like a ship. This is Norm Paulson, and that was like the ship there, that was called the Star Pilot. And so Norm Paulson wrote like this new age book called like the Brotherhood of Light. That's just like the new age mu movement today, and that was in the 70s. And I hear the same script going on today. And so that kind of like was early like mind programming for me. I spent 5 years at this place. From like 1.5 years old to 8 years old or something, roughly 5 years. And all kinds of stuff happened there. There was a little bit of sexual shaming and sexuality with the kids, and there weren't many kids. There was like a lot of unsupervised time with 2,000 acres on the ocean, and I could basically go walk around and just try and keep myself entertained. And so that was like the big 70s hippies, like back to the earth, like natural foods era. And they started some natural food stores and started a lot of the natural food stores that we see today, like in California. And so that was kind of a primer. So it's been a strange upbringing. And then, the leader of the commune was married George Van Tassel's daughter, and he spent a lot of time at Big Rock. And the George Van Tassel story is all about how aliens are positive. George Van Tassel went up into the craft and had a very positive experience. And so that kind of started the aliens are benevolent, phase from I guess the late 60s onwards, or whenever he had his airstrip at Giant Rock, California, down by Joshua Tree. I went down there a couple years ago just to check it out and do some research on the area. So
The aliens had given Van Tassel instructions to build this device, which he called the Integutron, if memory serves. And I think it was, and he also built some kind of geodesic dome kind of home or something. I may be getting him confused with someone else, but
It's the same thing, I think. It
yeah,
was
it's a.
Daniel Boone or George Van Tassel, or one of those guys built the tetrahedron, which is right next to Giant Rock, and it's a sound healing thing where people go for sound healing now, but it was supposed to be better built out. I guess there was some interference in it. It was supposed to have more technology to it.
Well, those giant rock conventions drew like 15,000 people. They were huge festivals, and UFOs would actually appear over the crowds. People had photos of it, right? I knew Bill Hamilton very well, and Bill Hamilton knew George Van Tassel personally, and he had the inside story of that. And Bill was a very hardcore, old school researcher. He wasn't likely to be fooled or manipulated, and quite skeptical about some things, but he believed Van Tassel implicitly, to the point where when Van Tassel told the story, he always reenacted the first encounter with those beings, where like he threw a cigarette and then this encounter ensued, and when Bill would relate the story, he would reenact everything, the throwing the cigarette part away and all that stuff. And he came away convinced. And also another thing that Bill said, because they try to likewise debunk Adamski, but what Bill said was, if the Venusian craft was a hoax that someone threw like this little model up in the sky and took a photograph, then how did one of those like bell-shaped craft, those Venusian type craft, wind up right over my head at Giant Rock, right? So there was a lot of contact experiences back in those days, and Bill used to always say, and I agree with him, that the contact E T era needs to be reevaluated. But you can also see how intelligence would become involved at some level, because they're always wary of people having these like encounters with ETs, unauthorized encounters with ETs, try to reel them in. You mentioned a moment ago how a lot of the jargon, a lot of the narratives that pertained in the old days with the Norm, what was Norman's last name, Paulson? Would that cult he founded, has insinuated itself into the New Age. Do you see any parallels with like the secret space program a lot of the jargon, a lot of the narratives, a lot of the what they would call memes nowadays? Do you see any
Yeah.
evidence of that having insinuated itself into that? And if so, like give your thoughts on that, please.
Yeah, I went to the Conscious Life Expo in LAX, and that's where I saw a lot of that stuff. You know, it was pretty much the same stuff in this in Norm's book that was e heavily edited, I guess. It wasn't. I read the second book he wrote, and it was called like The Brotherhood of Light, and they were talking about Lemuria and Atlantis and like the New Age, the the dawn of like basically 5D Earth, and got going back to a peace on Earth, and sort of like a Garden of Eden type thing. And like a lot of, it was kind of mirroring like the two Earth breakaways, where you have like all the negative people go to one Earth and all the positive people go to another one. And the 5D ascension thing was like a huge,
That's exactly what we're hearing. Oh, don't worry. You just raise your vibrations and you're going to branch off into this other timeline where you want to have like the Federal Reserve and all this other stuff. It'll be, it won't
It's
happen like
like
that. You know what I mean?
all the bad entities are suddenly benevolent entities and that kind of stuff, So
Do you think
it's
Norman Paulson was an intelligence asset? Because a lot of these cult gurus back then, and still to this day, a lot of them, Jim Jones was a classic example of that, but he wasn't the only one by any means. But we talked earlier about the whole Ken Kesey acid parties and Timothy Leary and the Grateful Dead and all that. Frank Zappa always talked about how people thought of the San Francisco, love scene, Summer of Love, 67, as being like, oh, this great consciousness awakening. But he thought it was an example, an extreme example of military intelligence manipulation. What are your thoughts on that?
He very well could have been, and I can say that the CIA definitely was infiltrating the commune because it was a place of interest. It was on prime property above UCSB Santa Barbara on the ocean with 2,000 acres, and John Travolta lived there at the bottom of the property, so I like drove by John Travolta's house quite a bit, or was given rides. And I had some dreams of like some abduction type rapey dreams with other kids in the field and like a helicopter overhead. It was that kind of stuff happened to me. And I was this blonde lady took three of us blonde haired kids to John Travolta's house one day, and John Travolta like was sitting by the pool, and he didn't talk to me, but his like cousin, these family members were like gave me some cookies and stuff, and things seemed to get weirder after that that visit with him for me.
In what way?
I had this dream afterwards where there was like three boys, like including me, like lined up on a field, and we were like getting raped by these military people, right? And I was like 7 years or 6 or 7 years old. And it's like I woke up and I was like, that dream seemed really w weird, and it's, stuck with me. And then there was like another time that I was taken up to San Francisco by this trucker, and he like laced the pizza and then took advantage of me,
And that
and
person
I
was
had
part
like
of that
a
cult as well.
yeah.
Well, the military helicopter aspect also, that doesn't surprise me that that would rear its ugly head, because it always seems to find its way into these, not always, but very often, into these cult-like scenarios. I've talked to a bunch of people in different cults around America, and there are similar dynamics, you know, this guru type figure. And like one of my friends was in this cult, and the cult leader like beat a puppy to death in front of these little kids, you know, just really traumatized them. And
Yeah. Yeah, and that sort of became a theme in life afterwards, with a lot of relationships I got into were kind of like with traumatized people. I was like all throughout life I've been like in partnerships with traumatized people for some reason. So it's been And there's like, trauma. I guess if you have like two MK Ultra victims like in a relationship, there's gonna be a lot of re-traumaing and like, alters traumatizing each
a lot of
other.
triggers and a lot of trauma. Yeah, a lot of trauma triggers, a lot of alters popping up. Like some adults, especially certain women. I don't know how common it is with male cult abuse survivors, but probably similar. But some of the women I've known, child alter can just suddenly pop up, right? And if you're not really familiar with their diction, how they talk, it could sound the same, but if when you really think about it and you really pay attention, they're sounding like a child, and sometimes they really sound like a child, right?
Yeah, yes. I have personal experience. We can get into that in the second hour.
Yeah, because we can talk about that too, because it's frightening, right? Because I'll get into the second segment as well, but it impacts one's life in all kinds of different ways, like getting a message from somebody, but they're in their child altar, and they're walking around in a mall and like they're lost, you know? It's that's terrifying for the person going through it. And if you're on the receiving end and you're getting these texts, but it's clear that it's a child writing to you, right? And they're just, you know, they're walking around lost in a mall. It's like, what the hell, you know? Those are some of the things that happen in real life to people that get traumatized to that degree.
I think I in one of our when I interviewed you one time, you told me a personal story about that happening to you, if memory serves me.
Yeah, I might get into that in the second segment, because yeah, that was pretty frightening. It was. When it happens to you personally and you observe it, and I had another friend in San Diego. She was a member of the San Diego UFO Society, and she came from Michigan, where she was subjected to a lot of hardcore SRA abuse, and also with the Shriners were abusing her, and also elements, there happened to be elements of the KKK there, even probably under some kind of Fed government control. But they abused her as well. And she used to call me up sometimes when I was in San Diego, and I could tell it wasn't the normal adult lady I was accustomed to talking to. She sounded like a little girl again, you see. So, and then she would call back later when she was in her normal state of mind and apologize profusely. Oh, sorry, you know, when I was a little, my little kid altar, I just felt compelled to call you, you know, I guess, you know, to reassure herself or whatever. But it's disconcerting to be on the other end of that. You know what I mean? So it sounds like you've seen, observed that firsthand.
Yeah, I have, and I've also like I've kind of had that happen to me where it's like I'm feeling like lonely, or I need validation, or I need someone to like say, hey, I'm here or something, and I'll I'll send a text out and it'll be in the wrong vein, and I'm not sure if it's an altering out, but it took a long time to like get past that type of phase in life where you become more mature and like integrate a lot of childhood woundings and all that type of stuff. It takes a lot of shadow work and
Well, in the
that
time
kind.
we got left, Eric, what I saw also at that conference we attended last year, there was a lot of triggering going on, a lot of animosity and hostility towards one another, not us, but I mean, what we've observed and what we've heard, it seemed to me that once again we have this dynamic where all these, not all, but many of these people that hadn't, to be quite frank, really worked on reintegration, healing, shadow work, call it what one will, right? And then they start rocking up to these conferences, get around other people, like themselves and similar to the same programs, and they can't help but trigger each other. And you can see why, because sometimes in these mind control programs, the mind control survivors are pitted against one another. They're at times made to abuse or torture or humiliate someone else, and so they meet each other in real life. The person being humiliated or abused may have memories, fragmented memories, may have no memories of what happened, but subconsciously they do. So they take an instant dislike to this person that, in reality, in that person was an altered state of mind, had abused them, right? So then they meet, and then it's like this dynamic occurs where they're just like all this mutual hostility, just.
Yeah. I was directly involved in that whole scenario. I think it was because of my radio show that I became enthralled in it. I've interviewed like 60 people on my show so far, and some people like five times the same people. But I was aware that it was gonna go down at the conference. And I was just waiting for the event, like when everything would come together and the rumble would happen. I knew it was going to happen before the conference, and that's why I just walked away towards the beach. I was just like,
Well, I
okay,
was
it's
there too.
happening.
I was there at the
Yeah, you
same
were
time.
there.
Then I got up and walked out because what else is there to do,
Not really. There was way too many people. There was way too many minions and people that had money in the game or something like that. And it's like, there was like, accusations of slander and lawyers and all kinds of stuff getting involved. And it was serious. And there was a lot of fallout afterwards. Lots of accusations and questioning of people's motives, and it could be, it's always, they call it Project Oblivion, but it's that Project Oblivion is nothing new. There's always been like whatever COINTELPRO or like agent provocateurs and even like the reptilian disruption of spiritual communities, for example, that we've talked about with that one testimony of the girl that had a reptilian boyfriend, and she wrote the whole thing. What was her name?
Susan Reed, and
Yeah, Susan Reed.
yeah, it was a pseudonym she used. She died mysteriously under unusual circumstances, I think in the Bahamas somewhere, if memory serves. But because I'd spoken to her and I corresponded with her for a while, and her book, was interesting. It's quite believable too, if anyone could find that. I think it was called The Body Snatchers or something.
Yeah, I printed out a copy of it, so I have it, and I did two shows on the book, like a talk book, and I did a lot of research into it. It was basically my Bible for a little while, you know. I took it very seriously.
Yeah,
And
I found it eminently believable, because like it jibed with a lot of other things that I've heard. Well, we've reached the end of a fascinating first segment with our guest Erickson. Erica, you want to give our viewers and listeners an idea of how they can get a hold of you and plug into your fine talk show?
The show's called Surface Planet Radio on SoundCloud.com, and I recently started up a Patreon that's free. I'm putting new shows on there, and I might update old shows on Patreon also. And I'm writing a couple articles on Patreon, and I have a Facebook page under Surface Planet Radio as well. There's over 200 shows on SoundCloud. A lot of people have trouble working with that website, so I started up a Patreon. That might be easier to use, so I have to transfer all the shows over to that one. So I've had two, you know, at least two. I've done at least 230 shows, if not more, so far, talk shows.
You've been doing this for a while. I mean, you interviewed me back in 2015. It was way back when, and to our dear listeners out there, thank you for tuning in. We've been having shadow banning issues, algorithms rather, driving people away from my channel. So if you can click like and subscribe and share it with your various social media platforms, I'd greatly appreciate it. And to our members, hang on. We're just getting into this. We'll see you at the top of the next segment.